Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is playing full out. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579. It's toll-free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, before we hit the phones, I'm going to set the table by talking about our topic. And let me begin with a story that I actually tell in the book Supercoach. And one of the reasons I love this story is because it sounds like a joke, and it is a joke, but it also actually happened, which I just love. So the four-star general was taking a tour of the company that had been hired by the military to complete a major defense contract. And the CEO, who I've since met, assured him that the project would be completed on time. But when the general toured the company, he felt that the CEO's team weren't playing full out. He argued they needed to remain at work 24/7 and do whatever it takes to succeed, you know, no matter how long the hours, and they needed to take whatever time they needed to take away from their home and family. And if they needed to put themselves under additional pressure and stress, then they just needed to do that. And they needed to work like their hair was on fire. And he told the CEO that understanding personnel management was like eating bacon and eggs for breakfast. The chicken was involved. The pig was committed. And the CEO, contractor, he smiled and he said, "Well, that's true, General, but the pig is dead and the chicken is still producing eggs. I think I want my people to stay involved." And as it happened, the general backed down, and the project was, in fact, completed a week early, on time, on budget. And it was an impossible project. It was a project that he told me should have taken them 18 months, and they were given 8. And it points to what it takes to play full out for an extended period of time. So any of us can play full out for a minute, right? If you have to, if you ever have done an exercise class, like my wife is really into Tai Bo, and I've begun to go along with her when Billy Blanks is teaching, and we do these Tai Bo classes, and I can do Tai Bo brilliantly for a minute and a half. Actually, I'm up to 20 minutes. I'm quite proud of myself. But when I started, I could go full out for about a minute and a half, and then my body would just go, and it kind of went downhill from there. And that was because I would push myself to my limits. I would give it my all. And the problem with that is it's unsustainable. Now, that's easy to see when it's something physical, like a workout. But we sometimes don't notice it when what we're doing is as much emotionally draining as it is physically draining. You know, we think we can put ourselves through enormous amounts of pressure and stress to continue to perform at a really high level, and we do it as if that capacity is infinite. And actually, that capacity is incredibly limited. And it's a great thing that it's limited. That's actually part of the feedback mechanism that our body and mind give us, that, you know, this is not the direction for us to be going in. Now, what's fun is that when you really understand what it takes to play full out, you don't have to sacrifice high performance for well-being. You actually can produce results that probably would surprise you, even if you're a really hard worker, but you can produce them without the pressure and without the stress and without the strain on your physical and mental well-being that you probably think just comes with that high performance, high results territory. So we're going to talk about that in today's show. If you want to get in for coaching on how to play full out in your own life, 866-254-1579 is the numbers, toll free, 866-254-1579, or from outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. But before we do that, I want to share a model, and I know I've talked about this at least once on the show before, but I think it was a few years back. And it's a model I first came across from one of my mentors, Dr. George Pransky. And if you're following along at home, if you've got paper in front of you, you might want to sketch this out. If you don't worry, you'll be able to follow it without the diagram. But I think the diagram's helpful. So on your piece of paper, if you got a piece of paper or in your imagination, draw a four square. So like a a box with a plus sign inside it. So it separates out into four separate boxes. And next to the top left box, write the words high investment. And next to the bottom left box, write the word low investment. And on top of the top left box, write the word low involvement. And on top of the top right box, write the word high involvement. And so what we're doing is we're setting up four grids. And the top grid, so if you look at the top left square and you map it out, it's high investment, low involvement. So that top left square of high investment, low involvement, that's the analogy that everybody seems to get is that's what it is to watch a football game or a baseball game or any sporting event. If you watch March Madness, that's March Madness. You really, really care. You have a huge emotional investment in how things turn out, and there's actually pretty much no involvement in how it turns out. Now, if you're watching a football game, if you're watching a basketball game, that's fine. That's not a problem at all. But a lot of us get caught up in high investment, low involvement with things like the economy, with things like feeding children, with things like poverty. So we get very caught up emotionally in a world issue, but we actually don't do anything. There's no actual involvement on our part in creating the results we want. So what you've got is the worst of all possible worlds. So the results really matter, and you are exerting no influence over how things turn out. And for a lot of people, that's a way of life, and that's a very frustrating way of life. Like I say, great for watching a basketball game or a football game, not great as a way of life. Now, if we go across, we get high investment, high involvement. And that seems to be a much better approach. That's what most people think of when they think about playing full out. Is, okay, it really, really matters to me that this works. I've got everything on the line. I've got my self-esteem on the line. I've got my house on the line. I've got everything that matters to me is on the line. But I am working really, really hard to make it happen. I am working all the hours, God sends. Now, the problem with high involvement, high investment, is that it's not sustainable. That's like me in the Taibo class. You know, I am now able to go 20 minutes before I start punching like a girl. No offense to the girls, actually. My wife punches much better than I do, but it's an expression. But in terms of our life, you know, we might be able to do it for 5 years. Some people are just so tough. I mean, I used to strive to be like this, and they can put themselves through the ringer for 10, 15, 20 years. And they're the people who often wind up with drinking problems or drug problems or relationship issues. They're on their second marriage. They're on their third marriage. They're realizing that their kids are going off to college and they haven't even met them. And that's the problem with high investment, high involvement. That's the problem with thinking that that's what it means to play full out, is the costs don't always match up to the benefits. In fact, they usually outweigh the benefits over time. And what a lot of people do is they burn out or they freak out or they get laid off and they go from high investment, high involvement into the bottom left quadrant of low investment, low involvement. So now they're just dropouts. They don't care and they're not doing anything. Now, if you've been playing full out from a high investment, high involvement place, low investment, low involvement feels great. It's a relief. It's like, oh, okay, I feel so much better. But you feel better because you're not putting everything on the line emotionally now. You feel better because you've let go of the idea that you need to get the outside right in order to be okay on the inside. And what happens is when people start to feel better, they start to get back involved and they think, oh, okay, well, I guess I've got the energy now. I guess I better care again. And they throw themselves back into something because they think, oh, well, playing full out means high investment, high involvement. I got to give it my all and I got to really, 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 really care. And this time they burn out quicker. And at some point, if people keep on that path and it doesn't get interrupted, they give up. They drop out. They decide it's not for them and they move on. So what's our alternative? Is our alternative to not play full out? Is to kind of half-ass it, you know, well, I'm trying my best. I'm really trying. I made a call this week. It was good. You know, is that our only other option? Well, it clearly isn't. And we've got one quadrant left for those of you playing along at home. And it's the bottom right quadrant, which is low investment, high involvement. Now, what does that mean? What does that look like? What that looks like is I recognize that my well-being does not come from my circumstances. My well-being is my default setting. We're born happy, right? That's, I talk about it all the time on this show. That's where you go when your thinking quiets down. We all go there. We all go back to that place of innate well-being, that place of peace, that connection to the thrum, I think I made that work up. I think the throb and hum is what I was going for, but the thrum of life. I like that. That's my new word. The thrum. Yes, very, very important word. And it's that feeling, that simple feeling of being, that simple feeling of being fully alive. And from that place, we do what we know to do. And that might at times be a whole bunch of action. At times that will be some reflection. And at times there'll be nothing to do. But we're actively involved in creating what it is we want in the world and in reaching our goals with our company and in meeting our targets when we're working for someone else. But without that sense that if we fail, our well-being's going to go. If we fail, we have to be miserable. Beyond the sort of, look, everyone gets a bit of a hit up and a hit down in the moment. You know, I always talk about when my youngest daughter used to do like three-legged races at school. You know, if she won, you know, we would go, yay, let's go get some ice cream. And if she lost, we would go, oh, let's go get some ice cream. And that's what low investment looks like. You recognize that you're going to do your best, and that's all that you can do. And in the end, sometimes that's not going to be enough. Sometimes it is. But playing full out is the best you can do. And so you're not overly caught up in the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. You're playing to win. You're playing to play full out, but you're not playing with your hair on fire. You're the chicken laying the egg, not the pig being eaten alive for bacon. And it turns out that low investment, high involvement is sustainable. And not only sustainable, it's self-reinforcing. Because the more time you spend working from that space, the more energy you have. Because instead of using up your personal energy and your psychic energy and your thought energy, you're actually tapping into universal energy. You're tapping into the life force, the energy of life. And that's why you see people sometimes who seem to be able to work tirelessly towards a goal. And in those cases where they're not getting stressed by it, they're not struggling, they're not straining, they're not caught up in high investment, high involvement, it's because they've tapped into this low investment, high involvement place. And they've tapped in to the energy of life. Let's go to the phones. If you want to get in, numbers to call, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And we'll begin in Chicago with Sheila. Sheila, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Excellent. You pretty much described a lot of what I'm going through and feeling right now.
You must be human then.
Very, very human.
Yeah, me too.
Cliff Notes version, you know, I am... a high achiever, mm-hmm. and, you know, at age 40-ish, 41, 42, mm-hmm. life kind of hit me, had gotten married, had a child, very successful career. Then a few years ago, I got divorced, went from making lots of money to very little money, and became a single parent, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to think that I made it through the transition, you know, relatively successfully.
Well, you made it through alive. I can intuit that from a few little things that have occurred since we began spoking. But yes, carry on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm much better than I was a few years ago. But my issue right now, mm-hmm. is listening to everything that you said. You know, I am the stress of all of this and doing the absolute best that I can, and it's still not being enough. Yeah. And I don't mean that to sound like I'm, you know, beating up on myself, but really when you're not making the money, but you still have, you're still paying to live, not necessarily the way that I used to, but that's comfortable, mm-hmm. Or acceptable, let's say that, because I'm not as comfortable as I would like to be.
Yeah.
But the stress of it, I am in major burnout right now, and yeah. I don't like it, and I don't want to be anymore. And I realize the gifts and the talents that I have, and I am working on those and am seeing progress, but it just isn't enough, and it's not happening fast enough. So I'm trying to figure out how to still play full out and not want to run away from home.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I can't let go of the joke. Major burnout, meet Captain Crappy. Okay. So, I don't know. I just, if I didn't get that out, it would be in the back of my head and I wouldn't be really paying attention to you. So I thought I'd best.
I needed to laugh anyway, so thank you.
The key to it, Sheila, and you're in a situation that so much of America, so much of the world is in. So it really is a, you know, we're feeling for you, sister. Mm. And the key to it not being the problem that it looks like right now is understanding the fallacy of the expression, the stress of all this.
Okay.
So the stress of all this implies, and I look, 99.9% of people you talk to are going to agree with you. So my job is to be the point. I'm the 0.01%. I'm not even the 1%. I'm the 0.01%. That points out that actually, there is no such thing as stress that comes at us from the outside world. The only way that the system, and this is to do with the design of the human system, the only way we can experience stress is via thought. It's a one-way system. Life can't get in there. So what happens is we have thoughts like, it's just getting worse. I'm not going to make it. I don't know how I'm going to keep this up. I'm just giving you my inner monologue during a Taibo class. You know, if this carries on, I'm going to die. This is so uncomfortable. And we feel the feelings of those thoughts because that's how thought works. We feel our thinking. We live in the feeling of our thinking. But because we don't see it as thought, it looks to us like it's coming at us from the outside world. We look to the outside world to fix it. So because we feel really uncomfortable and we think those feelings are coming from our life circumstances, we jump in twice as hard to attack our life circumstances to try and make it better. Now, when we're successful, you know, when we're able to affect our life circumstances, it seems like it works, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like it works because once we've changed our life circumstances, we stop having that thinking. So it wasn't the circumstances changing that made the stress go away. It was that we stopped thinking the stressful thoughts. Does that make sense, whether you believe it or not? Can you follow the logic of it?
It does make sense. So maybe I should be asking you how, because I get what you just said. When I look at my reality, which is, you know, I'm not even used to working full time, mm-hmm. honestly. But because I am, then my son has to go to after school care, which is ridiculously expensive, which puts what I perceive as stress on me because I can't be with him, and I would like to ultimately work from home during the hours that he's in school.
I'm gonna jump in for a minute, Sheila, because again, there's an expression that you use, and a lot of people use it, and it's a misnomer.
Okay.
And it's when I look at my reality. See, we don't have that option. All we can look at is our thinking. We can look at our thinking about our reality.
Okay.
And here's the trick. If you think your reality is fixed, so let's imagine that that reality is a holographic projection, and it's projected by thought, by a thought projector. When we think that holographic projection is really real, then what we do is we step into it and we try to fix it from the, you know, so we kind of get in there and we go, oh, this doesn't work and this needs to be over here and this needs to change. Now, if we see that it's just a projection of our own thinking, we also start to open up to the possibility that if a different thing was being projected, we wouldn't need to fix it. It's sort of like if you've had a, you know, you're having a really bad dream. I don't know if you've ever done this, but you're having a dream where your partner, you know, cheats on you or does something horrible, and when you get up, you kind of are like, well, what are you going to do about it? Have you ever done that kind of thing or had that done to you?
Well, I actually lived that. That's why I'm single right now.
Well, there you go. Okay. But this is the thing is, you know, when you get that it's a dream, even if you're not enjoying it, you do know you're going to wake up.
Okay. I gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing is there's something in the way that you're seeing your situation right now that looks really real. And it looks like this really is the way it is. So my job is to try and make the best of it or make the most of it or change it as best I can. And what I'm going to say, and this is true for anyone, is that if you step back, if you reconnect to your innate well-being, that place we all come from, that quiet place, you know, the now, that spiritual space that everyone has talked about through the ages, you know, just, you know, if all of that isn't meaningful, just, you know, a feeling of relative quiet inside you.
Mm-hmm.
From that place, when you look back out at your life, you'll see different things. And different things will occur to you. You'll get insights. You'll have new thinking about your lot in life. And that thinking will have a good feeling that comes with it because it will be inspired. It won't come from, when we're thinking from our memory and imagination, when all we've got is our brain, we're going to generate the same very limited set of options every time we look. When we allow it to calm down, when we get back to that quieter place in us, then suddenly we open up to this deeper wisdom that everybody's got access to. I don't know why, I don't know how, but I've never met anyone who in their quieter moments doesn't have access to a deeper intelligence, a deeper wisdom. You know, some people call it instinct, some call it inspiration, some call it intuition. But you get an idea from out of the blue. Something occurs to you that simply hadn't occurred to you before. And suddenly you either see an inspired way through, or you realize that through isn't the direction that you want to go in.
Okay. I actually had a little bit of that about an hour and a half ago, and I realized some changes that, and they're very subtle changes, but just a couple of things that would alleviate some of the the perceived pressure. Is that the way to say it?
Yeah, okay. Perceived pressure is perfect.
Yeah. So, because I'm moving in the right direction. I think I would just like it to be a little faster.
Yeah.
And pay me a lot more.
Sure. There's a difference between recognizing, boy, that would be great, and being open to that, and thinking, if that doesn't happen, I have to be stressed and pressured and unhappy.
And that makes perfect sense. I think it's what I want to not, I don't want to be on autopilot to where I automatically go there.
Yeah.
Just
from us having had this conversation, just from you noticing, oh, you know what? It even happens when I'm not trying. I'll have a moment of accidental quiet and I'll get some insights and things will seem a little bit different. And if you, I don't want to say cultivate that because that makes it sound like more of a doing than I mean. If you open up to operating from that place more of the time, you will have more and more insights. And those insights, some of them, you know, will just be interesting, but some of them will point you in a direction of easy action that when you see it, it will be a no-brainer. That's the direction that you'll start to go in.
No, that felt really good to hear. Just to if I open up from operating from that place more often, that it's like, okay, that I can do.
that we can all do. And the only reason we don't is because we don't recognize that that's how we're designed. All right, Sheila, thank you. I'm coming up on my break. We will be back after the break. I've got, we got Mary, Gloria, Heather, and Angela will be next in the queue. If you want to try to get in the second half, 866-254-1579 is the number to call. If you like the kind of things we're talking about on the show, check out supercoach.com. Follow me on Twitter @Michael_Neil, or you can like me at Facebook at facebook.com/MNeil. We'll be right back after this break.
Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about playing full out. And just before we go back to the phones, I will do a little plug. If you're in the United Kingdom or Europe or just fancy a trip, on the 28th of April, Dr. Robert Holden and I, Robert's got a show, and will actually be my guest next week on this show. We'll be doing a full day talk on the psychology of miracles. And we'll be talking about thriving and looking at a few different approaches to really kind of bring a sense of peace and well-being into a full-on life, but not in a way that's kind of a trade. It's like, well, okay, I'm going to drop out and I'm going to be peaceful and whatever happens, happens. But actually to let that place be the basis for seeing miraculous transformation and results show up in your life as well. So if you're interested in that, go to hayhouse.co.uk and click on the events tab. And you'll be able to sign up for that. The price point I know they set really, really, really cheap, at least by my standards, so that as many people as possible will be able to attend. In the meantime, let's go to Nova Scotia, shall we? And let's speak with Mary. Mary, what are we going to speak about today?
Hi. I want to live full out on the positive side of life for a change.
Okay. That's a fair point. I didn't include that in the title, but that's preferable.
Yeah, well, I could empathize with the negative. I saw myself in everything negative for the first 43 years, probably, right? Yeah. And the last 10 years, I've been doing a lot of work, and I finally get it. I'm no better, but I'm no worse. I have worth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I burnt out as a nurse. And I burnt out as a wife in a relationship that was not healthy for either one of us.
Yeah.
And I had a grandchild come along and got myself out of that and helped my daughter raise my granddaughter. And now I wanted to write. I always wanted to write.
Mm-hmm.
And finally got the funds together because I don't have much money. Yeah. I haven't worked like since 95, and I got the money together to take a writing course.
Yeah.
And I got all gung-ho, everything's great, and then a few obstacles would come up with the computer or whatnot. I got my first assignment off, which wasn't much, just mm-hmm. personal profile, and then the next one is your market, which I haven't been able to come up with. It's like, they want you to research the markets, and I'm not even sure what I want to write yet.
So,
or if that's even what I should be doing. I know.
Well, I'm gonna say two things that I'm hoping will be of use.
Okay.
And they're quite personal. Normally I go to the impersonal, but these are just quite personal because this happens to be one of my passions is writing. So when I first thought about writing a book, I'd been blogging since 2000 and had written quite a lot and had ghosted books and edited books. But I'd never written my own books. And I thought I was going to do it right. So I hired a writing coach who I'd been told was the woman you hired if you wanted to get nonfiction books published. This was in the mid-2000s. And the woman requested a writing sample. And so I sent her a writing sample. And I thought, because I knew my writing was good, I'd had enough feedback from the world that I knew. That it was quality, and I thought she was going to be so excited to find me.
Yes.
You know, it's like, she's going to say, "The Great White Hope, where have you been?"
Yes.
You know, and it didn't work out quite like that. She when I got on the phone with her, she said, "Do you remember? Have you ever heard this? Fred Astaire, when he did his first screen test, the screen test apparently said, can't act, can't sing, balding, can dance a bit." Right? And that was kind compared to what she had to say to me.
Okay.
You know, she said, well, your writing doesn't completely suck.
Okay.
But your business plan, because part of it was I had to sort of send her who I thought my target audience was and all that kind of stuff. Your business plan shows that you have no understanding of this industry. You don't take it seriously enough. And honestly, I think you're going to fail. However, she said, here are 21 things that if you change these 21 things and you do these 21 things, then I can say to you that within a year, You'll be ready to approach an agent, and within 2 years, you'll have a book deal. And within 3 years, you know, I think your writing's probably good enough that you'll have a book on the shelf. Now, I was, I think, devastated is the word. You know, and I took it really well and cried and stuff. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, okay, hang on. I got quiet, kind of like I was saying to that last woman. I didn't try to plow through it while my head was going a million miles a minute. And I waited a couple days, and I thought, you know what? I know I'm not going to change those 21 things. I don't care about that. That's not my if that's what it takes, then I'm going to fail, you know. But I do love to write.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, so I'm going to go ahead and write a book and worry about it later. And that's just what came to me. I'm not saying that's my advice to you. That's what came to me in that moment, in that quiet. And I swear this is exactly how it happened. That was on a Friday. On the Saturday, one of my old clients, my old coaching clients, used to be in PR, worked for MTV. She said to me, hey, I was thinking about you the other day. Have you ever thought of writing a book? And I said, well, funny you should mention that. Just yesterday, I decided to write a book. And she said, all right, well, look, let me make some calls for you. The next day, a guy whose books I'd been editing that were very successful called me. And he said, hey, I was at a party yesterday and my literary agent was there and he was, I was talking to him about you and he'd really like to see, do you have any writing? Have you ever thought of writing your own book? And I said, well, funny you should mention that.
Wow.
And 6 weeks later I had, you know, the top literary agent in London. About 2 months later, I had a 2-book deal with Hay House, and a year and a week from the day that she told me how crap I was, I hit number one on the UK bestseller list.
Wow.
Now, the reason that I think that story is relevant is it doesn't matter how good or bad your marketing plan is if you're not writing.
Well, that's it, but I just want to jump into the writing, like the writing exercises.
Well, and so look, if you've decided this course is for you, then go ahead and write stuff. And one of the things, and you can send them a marketing plan. I mean, in other words, it's no big deal. You write a bad marketing plan, you know, write a short marketing plan. You know, if it's just about kind of moving on with the course, that doesn't matter. But what I would absolutely say, and I would say this to anyone pretty much in any field, there's a great Jacques Prévert was a French writer, and he had a great approach. And he said, the best way to prepare for something is to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in today's day and age, you know, it is so easy. You can get a blog up in about 20 minutes with no computer skills, right? We live in such a writer-friendly culture and such a writer-friendly time that you can write and write and write, and you can be crap, and you can be crap in private, or you can be crap publicly, and you will get better. That's the nature of practice. When you practice something, you get better. If you have, as it sounds like you do, a feedback mechanism, of course, then that's great too. But there's no substitute for just sitting down and writing. And that's what I mean by low investment, high involvement. You're not looking for your writing to save your life, to bring you great fortune in the first month, you know, or anything, you know, like that, that would be just incredibly unlikely.
Right.
You're simply putting in the hours, darkening the page, and having fun. And the one thing that I will say is, please, 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 and anyone else who's listening, if you're a writer or you want to be a writer, go to my blog, supercoach.com/blog, and there's a few tips there, but there's one called the Creativity Factory, but there's one called an End to Writer's Block, and I really, really recommend you have a look at that.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you, Mary.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. You know, it's in the outside world, skills succumb to practice. Now, you know, this is the thing about playing full out. Right. Now, don't write till your fingers bleed. You know, that would not be playing full out. That would be, you know, playing to die. You know, that would be the high involvement, high investment, you know, where it's like, oh, I got to keep going. I got to keep going. I got to keep going. It's like, no, you do a little and you do it regularly. Have an average day. Write for 10 minutes a day at first. Write for 15. Write for 5. But just start writing. Or if it's not writing, just whatever it is, just start. All right, let's go to Silver Spring, Maryland, and let's speak with Angela. Angela, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello there. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have, seems like often throughout my life, I enjoy listening to your show, been in the box for the high investment and high involvement,
mm-hmm.
only to find myself in the, you know, shortly thereafter, not very long because it's not sustainable, in the low investment and low involvement box.
Right. And that's, by the way, that's the story of Western society. So welcome to the club.
Yeah. So it's hard to get around the guilt associated with the low investment, low involvement, and that kind of, you know, prevents me from moving forward.
Oh, sorry, Angela, can I ask you a really stupid question?
Sure.
What guilt?
The guilt that I am probably not making use of the gifts that I know I have, and the guilt that I am taking things for granted, and the guilt that I'm not doing my best. And
And again, I do recognize that this probably is thick of me, but why would you feel guilty about that?
Because it's, you know, reiterated over and over in our society that, you know, if you have opportunity, you know, person if you don't take advantage of it.
And if our society told you to jump off a bridge, would you?
I'm not me, because I'm typically the person that does just the opposite of what everybody else says, so I probably would.
Let me tell you a story. This is, I don't know why I've been telling this story a lot lately. It's probably because it just makes me laugh, but it does strike me as relevant. I had a client, a very successful client, and he came to me for coaching, and he was really struggling with self-esteem and self-worth and all those kinds of issues. And before we started speaking, he just was telling me about a dream he'd had, this wild dream he'd had the night before, where he and a friend and Saddam Hussein, who this was like a couple of years after Saddam Hussein had died, but he and a friend and Saddam Hussein were on a private jet and they were flying out to Russia to party. And he figured out on the flight from New York to Russia that Saddam Hussein was having an affair with his best friend's wife. And he didn't know what to do because he didn't want to sort of, you know, they were out there to have fun and he didn't want to kind of ruin the mood, but he really felt like guilty about not telling his friend that Saddam Hussein was sleeping with his wife. And so he woke up exhausted, right? So that happens in this dream. And then in the session, as we're talking, he has a real insight. He has a real realization that so much of what he's feeling, that's coming out as anger and guilt and shame and frustration in his job is to do with, you know, the idea that his value in life is linked to his productivity. And he sees it really clearly. And you can tell when somebody really sees it for themselves that it's not just an idea that they agree with. You know, he got it like you get a joke. And the great thing about when you have that kind of insight is your eyes light up, you relax, because it frees you up a bit. It sets you free. But about 30 seconds after I saw him get it, he closed back down, the light went out in his eyes, his shoulders went back up, and he said, "Well, what do we do about it?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, how do I deal with this?" And I said, I don't understand. And he said, "Well, you know, how do I deal with all this, this guilt and this self-worth and this shame?" And I said, "Well, with respect, that's a bit like asking me, how do you deal with the guilt of not having told your friend that Saddam Hussein is sleeping with his wife? It's not really happening anywhere outside your head. So there's nothing that you have to do about it."
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's just thoughts. And you know what? When you let go of them, they go away because there's no substance to them. There's no, you know, we have this idea that thoughts have a life of their own. Well, they don't. You know, we can breathe life into them. We can put action and energy and we can bring them to life. But the second we stop doing that, they flop back down to the, you know, to the ground like a flaccid balloon.
So do you think we actually cause them to materialize
I don't think anyone causes thoughts to materialize in that way. I think thoughts a lot more mysterious than we think it is. I don't know where it comes from. You know, there's theories about random brain electrodes firing and certain thoughts coming out. There's certainly everyone I know has the experience of thoughts coming from seemingly nowhere, from beyond the personal. You know, spiritual thoughts, insights. You know, just suddenly seeing something that you couldn't possibly know. So I don't think we do that. But if you see that that's all that's happening, the great thing about it is it's like a dream. It's like, wow, that was a terrible dream. Wow, that was a terrible thought. Okay, what do I want to do now? What's for lunch?
Okay, that's a great advice. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for calling. You know, I know that's counterintuitive. I know that's counter to the sort of self-help mentality of I must fix my thoughts. I must control my thoughts. I must stop thinking the wrong thoughts and start thinking the right thoughts. But the problem with that, the way most people do it, is they do it from a place of fear and misunderstanding. That they're afraid that their bad thoughts can get them. And so they try to replace them with the good thoughts as quickly as possible. That's simply not my experience or understanding of life and of how the mind works. Thoughts come through, and from time to time, we get caught up in them. I sometimes use the analogy, I've used it on this show, I know, of the television that's on in the corner. So you're carrying on, you're doing your thing, maybe you're writing or you're working on something, and there's this TV on in the corner. And it's annoying, and you sometimes wish you could turn it off, but it's on. And sometimes it's on a positive, happy, upbeat channel. Sometimes it's on a soap opera channel. Sometimes it's on a miserable crime drama channel. And it's, that's like our personal thinking. It's always going on, but it's going on like a TV in the corner. It doesn't really matter what channel it's on until you're paying attention. As long as you're involved with what you want to create, you're playing full out because you're not involved with your thinking. You're involved with your life. Doesn't matter what channel it's on. It's only in those moments where we do get caught up in the TV and we forget that we wanted to be involved in our life and creating what we wanted, that suddenly it seems really important what channel the TV's on. And that's actually one of the best ways of knowing you've gone away from playing full out. One of the ways to know you've changed games and you're not playing full out anymore, now you're up in your own head, is when it starts to seem like it really matters which thoughts you think. Because when you're re-engaged with your life, thoughts come and thoughts go. And to the extent that you're in touch with your natural well-being, it doesn't really matter what thoughts pass through your head because they're like dandelion seeds. They'll just float right on by. Let's go back to the phone. Let's go to Florida and let's speak with Gloria. Gloria, what are we going to talk about today? Hello, Gloria. Gloria going once. Gloria going twice. All right, well, we'll see if maybe Gloria will find us again later. Let's go to Carmel and speak with Heather. Heather, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about?
Well, when you started the show, you started talking about the whole military thing, and it just completely triggered me. I had no idea what you were going to talk about. And going over the grid that you spoke to me, it just really resonated with me about how I've been thinking about my situation with my fiance, who has been overseas for the last 15 months.
Mm-hmm.
And my level of commitment and how much I'm engaged with it and blah, blah, blah. And then there's been a lot of no communication recently with him. So it's gotten really painful.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to figure out how to just be involved with my kids. I'm a nurse. I'm super involved with the community, and then all of a sudden, this no communication with him has really taken me off into Never Never Land, where I just am searching desperately how to cope. And, you know, I do have communication with him through text messages and occasional phone calls that are very rare now, but it's high, dangerous job that he does, and I'm always worried, and it's just this constant praying and worrying about him. And something you said today just made me completely realize if I could just shift my way of thinking about this situation with him and be calm about it, I'm going to find happiness again, because I've really lost my happiness about my life because I'm so worried all the time.
Do you know, I really feel you. And now I'm going to say something stupid. I always thought that the job that I would most hate would be to be a spy. Because I just thought that would be the most stressful. This was when the world still looked outside into me. I thought that would be the most stressful job. I thought, I'm terrible at lying. I'm just, you know, just be awful. And then one day I was sitting on the deck of my house, and I was just looking at the trees and the breeze flowing through the leaves, and I was feeling incredibly calm. You know, I was just in tune with that place, that place of calm that's inside all of us. And I suddenly realized, you know, if I felt like this while I was doing it, I could be a spy. I mean, it's still not like my first choice. But if that was what life dealt me, if that was what I was given, I realized I could be at peace even in that situation. And I think there's really something amazingly kind about the human system, about the way we're designed. That because we live from the inside out, because our feelings come from our thinking, and because we're always connected to this larger energy of life, to this thing that feels like well-being, that feels like peace, that feels like calm, we actually have that capacity in a very natural way, not a forced way, not a hard work way, but in a completely natural and relaxed way, to return to well-being in any moment, in any situation.
Yeah.
I sometimes use the analogy of, you know, you can walk away from home. Like if this feeling of calm and peace and well-being is home, you can walk 30 feet away, you can walk 50 feet away, you can be walking away from it for a year. And the second you turn around and look back in the direction of what's just true about human beings, our natural connection to life, you're home again. Doesn't matter if you've been walking in the opposite direction for years. The moment you turn around and look back towards peace, towards our inner source, you're right back at peace.
I can't tell you how long I've been struggling with this. And it's just today, I heard what I was supposed to hear today when I turned you on. I cannot believe it. I feel like there's a piece of the puzzle that's been connected to me today.
Oh, well, I'm thrilled, Heather. I'm thrilled. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Oh. I just, you know, there's so much in our lives that's just a simple misunderstanding. You know, it's like going into a somebody's house and they've got the taps reversed, so the hot is on the right and the cold is on the left, and you think you're turning on the cold water and you suddenly burn your hands. It's a misunderstanding that we've all been brought up to think that our feelings come from the world, that in some way the outside world, what's going on out there, determines our experience in here. And it's just a misunderstanding. It works exactly the opposite way. It's our thoughts in here that create our experience in here, and it's through that experience that we wind up looking out into the world. And when you know that, and when you recognize that we're always connected to this world of deeper feeling, to this peace, then all that can ever happen is your thoughts take you a little ways away, and then your understanding that it's just thought brings you straight back home. Thanks for listening. My guest next week will be Dr. Robert Holden. If you like the stuff we talk about on the show, follow me on Twitter at Michael_Neal. Visit me online at supercoach.com, or you can like me on Facebook at facebook.com/MNeal. Till next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.